Hello and welcome to the very 247th episode of the Shut Up and Sit Down podcast. The podcast all about board games, and the people who love them.
It's only about one this time.
One board game.
It's just one.
Just one.
And we've been obsessed with this board game recently.
We have
done so much coverage of this
it's
thing.
It's not even a board game. It's just a game.
It's just a card game.
I don't even get a board in the box. I want my money back.
What the heck?
Yeah, we've been obsessive about this. We've been shouting about this. But I feel like it's relevant and required.
Feels like a moment.
Because of the fact that, yeah, this game came out a couple of years ago. And there have been people out there going, this is wonderful. Mm-hmm. There have been people out there going, this is fine. But I think that this is huge. And I think that everybody who really loves games owes it to themselves to at least understand what it is and check it out.
What is that game?
That game. That's a wet drum roll. Is Earthborn Rangers.
Yep, talk about Earthborn Rangers on this podcast. If you've not seen our video review for Earthborn Rangers mm-hmm. that went up on the site very recently, we would advise that you check that out because we're not going to talk about what the game sort of is, you know, fundamentally that much on this podcast. We're mostly just going to talk about weird stuff that we liked about it in a quite fluffy and loose way.
Yeah, there was so much stuff that we really wanted to dive into in the video review, but it would have become insanely long.
Yeah.
So we're just having a bit of an exploration about things we loved and going into a deep dive on more of the systems.
Yeah.
It's a game that is worth it doing that for it. And hopefully once you hear us chatting, you'll get more of a sense of that. There will be some more spoilery things in here though mm-hmm. that we did not want to film and put in. Not too many, but a few bits and bobs. So if you're really averse to knowing anything mm-hmm. and you do just trust us, then just try and track down a copy of this game.
Yeah. But I also think that nothing in here is going to be like some crazy, like big spoiler revelation. It's not that kind of game.
It's not that kind of game. The stories that are going to unfold are going to be your own.
Whoa.
It's such a good game.
Let's talk about it now.
Let's do it.
Matthew, tell the class about Earthborn Rangers and how much you love it.
Yes. Earthborn Rangers is my dad. They work hard and they... No. Earthborn Rangers is absolutely smashing. It's just incredible. I love it. It's so strange and it's so hard to describe, and that's why it took me half an hour in a video.
Yeah.
And we're not going to go into it much because I've done so in the video, and in the last episode we talked a bunch about Daybreak and some of the kind of ways that it's been manufactured in a way which is sustainable. But Earthborn Rangers is 100% biodegradable. You can bury it when you're done with it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to bury it. That has some issues. I've seen a couple of people talking about how the cards get a little scuffed easily, etc. Because they're not coated in plastic. But I think the way they've managed to produce it in a way that still has colors that pop, still has the feeling of a nice game, is not something that will be completely unrecyclable.
I thought I would find the like FSC certified sort of like recyclable cards less nice to like hold and manipulate. I actually prefer them.
Interesting.
I think they're really, really nice to like shuffle and manipulate. Like I really like how good they feel in the hand in games like Daybreak and in Earthborn Rangers.
Yeah.
I think they did a great job with it.
And I think that like definitely there is a degree to which like some people will be like, they're scuffing up for me. I don't like them. They're not as durable. But it's mm-hmm. like, you know what? Like you sleeve them. If you're that kind of person, then you're probably a sleever anyway. So just get on with your sleeves.
And then when you're done with Earthborn Rangers, you can bury the game and you can use the sleeves to sleeve your copy of Twilight Imperium, fourth edition or fifth edition
or
whatever
edition.
Or you can
just sleeve yourself in a giant thing. But hopefully in the future, we will develop green sleeves.
So what we're not going to talk about in this podcast, we're not going to talk about the environmental stuff anymore.
No.
We're not going to talk about kind of how the game works, aside from a very basic description of it.
Yep.
I might as well do that now. It's an LCG style card game.
Yes.
You build a deck that represents your ranger. You're going to go on an adventure with your buddies.
Yeah.
You're going to do skill checks. You're going to maybe succeed at them. You're going to maybe fail at them. But you're going to go on a fun adventure over multiple sessions where you conquer bad stuff. Not really. You don't do much conquering in this game. This is a problem. I'm already stumbling directly into the Earthborn Rangers problem.
The Earthborn Rangers trap. I mean, you look at it and you're like, okay, it's like Arkham Horror, I guess. Like, but a bit more cheerful. And it's like, nah.
That is the closest current analogy to what it is.
Yes,
it's
it is.
If you have played Arkham Horror, then you will be familiar with the flow of a round of this game to some extent.
Even the like living card game, which was obviously a Fantasy Flight trademarked term.
Yeah, it's actually an ECG.
Yeah, everyone else's card games are actually dead. If they're not Fantasy Flights, it's a dead card game. But even those, like, you know, I love the Arkham Horror LCG. It's great. I still do love it.
It's really good.
But it was obviously a foundation, which was, here's a very small box, which gives you a little starter taste mm-hmm. and gives you a few sessions. And then it's a case of buying more things. And it was clearly a model which was designed on being something you could keep playing and having a little, almost a subscription model to it.
Right, yeah.
And I like that. That's fine. Mm-hmm. But Earthborn Rangers, it doesn't feel fair to compare it in the same vein, because as a core box, it's like you've got a lot more game there than you would have absolutely. In like the absolutely. Arkham core box.
Yeah.
Of it being like, it's not just like three or four sessions. It's like a lot more than that.
Yeah. And it's not as big as something like Gloomhaven. It's maybe more of the scale of something like a Jaws of the Lion, but it's like you get, you know, it's that is the experience. You yes. don't need to continually expand it, even though they are expanding it.
Yes.
They are adding more stuff. It feels like that expansion to it is like a big chunk of game rather than just like a little bit extra.
And it's already, I don't know. I mean, it's
already
weighty.
I
think it's more than Jaws of the Lion, really.
Yeah, like, no, sure.
It's got a lot going on.
I guess it's more to say that you could probably finish this in a year, whereas you yes. probably couldn't finish Gloomhaven in two.
Yes. Yeah, that's a fair way of putting it. So yeah, it's already a kind of rich thing, but it is just a box full of cards, and the way that those cards unfold is really smart. So we're just going to deep dive into some of that a bit more.
Yeah.
Like, one of the things I really like about it early on is the way that it allows those simple cards to, that you have a set of cards that are like kind of attachments for missions.
Mm, yeah.
And the way it can use those in lots of different ways, like the way it's like rescue.
Mm-hmm.
And rescue could be used for so many different things. It could be like, you know, like you've got to bring someone back from a terrible situation,
yeah, or
like
it could a standard be like rescue mission.
I've lost my cat, like, you yeah. know, the way it can just be like attach this to this thing,
yeah,
and then using that context, it's just so neat.
Mm-hmm.
Like having like 10 cards that are double-sided so you can use it for different things,
yeah, yeah,
and often the double-sidedness is
playful.
It's playful and helpful. Like yeah. sometimes it's like find a thing mm-hmm. and then the other side is like rescue or whatever. It's like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah, yeah.
that sort of thing of being like, you then go, okay, you've done that. So where's the card? Oh, it's just the other side of it.
Mm-hmm.
In a way that the context, again, springs out, and the way that it's able to use these cards as modifiers that allow you to look up things in the book in a really right. simple way.
Yeah.
Of like, okay, well, it's this for this.
Mm-hmm.
That is super cool. And the way that also it means you can have a kind of game state where you've just got a little stack of cards, which are just yeah. like,
that's your like save yeah. file.
We're looking for this thing with this person.
Mm-hmm.
And the way it still resets as well, in terms of it being like, okay, well, you have to go and do this little fisherman side quest before the end of the day.
Mm, yeah, that stuff's really nice.
It means that, again, like, you don't have to worry too much about save state stuff. You can, mid-session, be like, oh, actually, we're going to stop now, but we want to carry on.
Yeah.
But mostly, everything gets pretty resolved.
It's nice to feel like you've got more than enough time to play a session of this game. I had a few sessions of it where I was slightly hamstrung by the fact that we didn't have that long to play it.
Right.
And it's really nice, that feeling of stopping exactly when you want to stop
yes.
rather than you have to stop.
Yes.
Because it is a game, we should talk about this structure that it has, of being like very free-flowing. It's
yeah.
like when you end a day, when you decide to stop playing for that session, it could be because you're like just kind of tired of playing the game.
Yeah.
Or it could be because you're like wounded and injured and sad and need to go and lie down for a little bit.
Yeah.
In real life.
Yeah. Whoa. Yeah. It could be pragmatic for lots of reasons. It could be pragmatic in the game, but it could also be pragmatic in real life.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I found what I loved about the game the more I played it was the way that the language in the game and the way the flow of the game is just so tightly interwoven that we did start discussing things about the game.
In its language,
and that made sense in the context of the game. That was
right.
really cool. Like, in the way that you actually start to feel like these characters. And the characters are kind of blank slates. And I've seen some people criticizing that, the fact that it's like, you don't have that sense of like character like you do in the Arkham game. Of like, you are this person, the sassy detective who just won't stop shouting at demons. But I like the blankness of these characters.
Yes. Yeah, I think that it's a really fair criticism, to be honest, because it definitely is. In Arkham, the cards you have for your character like automatically like tell a story.
Yes.
Like the cards that you have define the character you are playing. But then I guess it's the opposite of that in the Earthborn Rangers. You build that character in your mind. Like,
yes,
you know, it is more creative, more imaginative. You're not filling some shoes.
No.
You're choosing that you're going to put the shoes in your deck and they're going to define who you are.
Yeah. And like the character creation stuff is one thing that I wanted to dive into a lot more in the video review, but couldn't for time reasons.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed the way that worked, of it being like, well, first of all, you have, you know, these sets of attributes. Like, and you just start with like very... Is that the way you start? I can't remember.
Yeah, actually. No, you start by working out what your like personality card is, which is the thing that determines how much like focus and spirit and fitness you have. So like what your core traits are. Then you choose, they're called personality.
Yeah, like traits.
Traits, personality. I
which are just vibes.
Wording. Yeah, they're like, I'm thoughtful. Take two thoughtful cards into your deck. You know, I'm ambitious or whatever.
Yeah, so you just look at them and it's like, don't worry too much about what the rules of them are. Just go with the ones that feel like, these ones. And then it being like, what's your background? And being like, and then what's your like skill? And it being like the background being like, I'm from a farming community. I'm from this. I'm, a, you know. And then having these combinations of things slowly building up rather than being like, choose your background. You have to choose like, what's your skill set? What's your background? It's just like, you choose them one at a time.
Yeah.
And then you kind of, it felt quite natural of being like, well, I'm this kind of person. So I think it makes sense for me to be this background.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then, okay, well, this background, these personalities, I think this fits for me.
Yeah.
And it means you're slowly building out like a sense of, not necessarily a personality, but a sense of a skill set, a sense of like what you're going to be good at.
Right.
What sort of a person you are, what sort of a ranger you're going to be like. And I like the way that the context of the character is less focused on personality and backstory and more focused on pragmatics, like how useful are you? What sort of things are you good at doing in the wild?
That really comes out in a two-player game as well, where you have to split responsibilities for like, you can't be good at everything. So I'm playing most of this game with my flatmate Luke, and he is playing as the sort of like more of a sort of adventurous, I think it's Seeker might be the sort of class, and it's more about getting places and looking and doing, you know, and getting scouting, going forward, propelling us through the game, pathfinding. Whereas my character is the engineer sort of style, which I think you are as well.
Yeah, both
sort of the artificer engineer. Much more about gear and about like solving problems by like having a little gizmo at just the right time.
Yes. Or observing and like being much more like less doing and more waiting. But then having moments where because I've done that, I'm incredibly helpful.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like one of my favorite cards actually in my deck of like the kind of artificer gizmo person, it's just like a notebook.
It's called like the Farinadex or something like that. I've got that one too,
and I love it because it's like basically it's just every time you do achieve something in a certain way, like every time you see something finished, it's like you put a token on it, and basically means these tokens can then be used to help in like other tasks in the future. And it's just lovely. It's like it's just a picture of a notebook with some drawings and sketches of like creatures and stuff. And it's just the simple amplification of the idea of like, you're taking the time along the way to take notes on things. Then when we face problems in the future, we can face them more, you know, like, oh, well, hang on. I think I've got an idea because like I understand this more. And the way that I love that card basically because I started to realize the more I played the game that was really, that card was an exemplification of the way the whole game worked.
I was literally just about to say this.
Yeah.
It is a really shining example of a game where you learn more about the world and that makes you better at it rather than necessarily, and you said in the review you're like, oh well, you don't get more stuff and like level up your character. It's true, you don't like level up, but you do occasionally,
you do get stuff,
get there little is, rewards, you know, and gear and
there is a
and
deck
stuff.
Of like rewards you can get, but it's not the thing you're going for.
No it's nice when it happens, but you're not looking at like, it's not an unlockable envelope, it's not a secret little thing. It's like sometimes you'll just be like, oh, I helped this person, so now I've got their fishing rod. Like, and also like the stuff that I've got so far, it's like, well, I don't even know if I want to put it in my deck. Like, I'm quite happy with what I have at the moment because I'm really enjoying learning how to make my own engine tick over, how to be a better ranger. Because the more interesting stuff is not necessarily, obviously your own stuff is interesting, but also so is everything going on in the world. The game is such a character.
A lot of the time I was doing the like side quest just because I wanted to like unlock new dialogue, which is not something you get in board games very often, but it's not uncommon in video games. Being like, I want to know what this person will talk to me about once I've done this thing for them. And like sometimes it's like more satisfying than others, but it's like the characters are just nice.
Yeah,
you're like, yeah, I'm gonna do
They're
this
fun to hang out with.
It's really hard to, again, it's really hard to express, and I saw a lot of the people responding to the extensive video review of it being like, but what do you do in this game? And it's like, yeah, it's hard to describe that. And I think what amazed me about it is there is a story that starts to unfold, but it takes a while to warm up.
Absolutely.
It takes a while to even appear.
Yeah.
And initially you're just wandering around kind of doing stuff. And I was surprised by how much I was enjoying that. And actually being like, you know what? We're going to go over here. Oh, it's that person. Okay, let's talk to them.
That feels much more like a role-playing game campaign, right? It's like, and I also think not only is it like, it's useful in that sense that it gives you that feeling of freedom, but also it's so useful in that kind of being the tutorial area of being like, well, you know, you're still not entirely sure how your deck works. You're not entirely sure how the flow of this game works. Just potter around for a bit, like learn some stuff.
Yeah.
And then you can face the challenges. You're not like this big hero that's like super skilled up and smart from day one. You need to actually learn how to play the game, and you need to learn how to like play your character.
The fact that the first thing it does in the game is says you've got to find this person.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
like basically it's hilarious because it really does treat you like in a condescending way that you can react to in a mm-hmm. nice way. The mm-hmm. game is like, well, it's your first, you know, you've just starting this. Mm-hmm. Before you go out, like, go and find this person who makes biscuits. Yeah. And you can take some biscuits to the nearby town. It'd be a good way to make some friends.
That's a little job for you.
Yeah, it's like, here's a job. Like, go to this little town, check out all right, and you can make some friends. And it's like trying to encourage you being like, you know, literally the person who is effectively your boss, your elder of the Rangers is like, look, you know, go and talk to people. Like, it basically kind of says like a lot of this job is about checking in on people and knowing people and having relationships with them. The way to do that is take them some gifts, you know, introduce yourself. Mm-hmm. It's good advice. It's good, solid advice for life. It means you're going through this path deck. And the way you go through the path deck is usually at the start of every round, like when you decide that's a new round, you're going to draw up new cards from this deck and things are going to get attached to you or go along the way and be these shared obstacles or things of interest, whole range of stuff. But when you're in towns or, you know, there's kind of some odd obfuscation of it being like you still have like maybe creatures and stuff around while you're in the town.
This is a little bit out of context of what we're talking about. But yeah, that is maybe my one actual criticism of Earthborn Rangers is that it's not necessarily clear at times whether you...
You're on the road to there or at the place?
Exactly. Like, am I at the place we're going to or am I traveling there? Because if I was, you know, you're coming across like characters who live at the place and parts of the place, but also coming across things that kind of exist outside of the place.
Yeah.
And part of me thinks that's just to do with the fact that because it's a world that's kind of nomadic and strange and, you know, these settlements feel scattered. They're not like big, bulky like places. They're like a couple huts and a little research station.
And I kind of was headcanning it that it might be like, you know, that these places are still quite wild.
Yeah,
like, exactly. And you do just have creatures coming in and out of them and stuff. Yeah. And yeah, that's kind of one of those bits of headcanoning where it does, one of the few instances where I think it does lean on you as a player to inject a bit of your own imagination to hide some of the fuzziness.
Yeah.
But it means that like in this instance, the first thing you're doing is you're trying to go through this deck quickly. You're trying to go through the path deck to find a character. And like I think when you played it, you found them straight away.
Mm.
We had to dig through the deck to find them. And it was like a job. But that was kind of a, you know, that made sense. Mm. This is the mission. We have to go through these cards, deal with problems along the way until we find the person we need to talk to. And then like, well done. Now we carry on.
Yeah.
But then when we got like past that bit, I think the next bit was like, deliver some biscuits to people.
Yeah.
And so again, we went to another location and we were digging through this deck to find people to give them the biscuits. Mm-hmm. But then after that, it was like, we had this thing of like, well, we're here. We just made this deck for this location.
Yeah.
Do we even want to look through
it?
Or do we just want to like... leave?
Go somewhere where there's more people potentially.
And then that was the interesting question of being like, sometimes you're just like, there might be something interesting here. You might be like, well, I'm kind of intrigued actually, I want to know about this. But you might be like, no, let's just go, let's just move through. Especially if you had an early lucky draw where like, you know, you would be in a location and you drew a bush and like a deer and you're like, should we just leave?
Yeah.
Like, should we just get out of here before anything bigger or weirder turns up? And that being a conversation that was, it took us a while to get a sense of the flow of that game, because sometimes you will just like assemble together, and luckily it only takes a second or two to assemble a little deck, but you'll assemble a deck for an area and then like you might be like putting it away and assembling a new one.
Yeah, you're like, I hate this place.
And 2 minutes later.
Get me out of here.
Other times you turn up and like a horrible thing turns up straight away and you're stuck there for ages. Like,
it's so great how the different biomes and locations have their own like personalities as well. And how quickly you realize that the game is taking it quite easy on you in that first like deck of woodlands where it's like, oh, I see some deer and some berries. And then you go to like the mountains or something and it's like, there's like a vulture that circles overhead the whole time.
Follows you.
Tiring you out just by being there watching, ready to have a little eat.
It's circling around your head and just like exhausting you gently with the pressingness of it. Yeah,
and one of those biomes also has like a bush that's also kind of looks a bit like barbed wire.
Yes.
And so such a lovely like subversion of like, a bush, it's nice and deer will eat fruit off it. And you go to the next place, it's like, a bush, it kills you.
Yeah.
Like, okay, cool.
Yeah. And that's when like stuff like obstacles really comes into play of having cards where it's like, oh, you get cards that effectively, like most of the time you have situations where if there's like a friendly character in the area, they don't get in the way. Like they don't make it harder for you to leave or harder for you to do things. But a lot of the time, if you have like a predator in front of you, or as we mentioned in the review, the annoying little girl who kind of follows you around.
So good.
She does kind of basically exhaust you when you're trying to like, she kind of is in the way, in the way that friendly characters usually uniformly are not. But otherwise, it is a thing of like, oh, well, actually, I can't come and help you right now because I've got this massive, horrible bush in the way. Yes. Whereas usually I just walk around it. And then obstacles are things that are actively stopping you from even leaving. Mm-hmm. Like you have to be like, oh, okay, well. And it does work. This idea of like you're going along the path and as you're getting closer to the place, it's like, oh, there's another bloody massive boulder in the way.
Yeah.
Or like there's something weird blocking the...
I love that way that and those things can range as well from being like, you know, a big pile of logs that's like, you know, a fallen tree that you're like, oh, I've got to navigate around this because we want to stick to the path versus like, you know, a huge pack of predators or like a giant stone automaton that's in the way. It's like the scale of what it can do with just those really simple keywords is huge.
We had a thing of like, it was like a cloud of bees. It was kind of an obstacle.
It was like a floating...
Yeah, it was like, I think a floating hive or something held aloft by bees.
So good.
And it was like, what the hell is this? So just odd things. But also the way that it has this uniform rules that like, yeah, you can use your core basic skills to overcome obstacles. Mm. Like if you are like, you know, a seeker, if you're someone who's good at getting stuff done, you can be like, it's fine. I can help navigate over this boulder. But then most of these things also have other ways that you can get around or work through it that might have a side bonus. It might have a thing of like, well, or you can do this. Like you can forage and it's a different way of getting past the problem.
Yeah.
But it's not just like, oh, well, if you don't have the strength skill, then you can do this. It's often like, oh, that could be helpful. Like it's not a trade-off. It's often like, well, it'll be harder to do it this way, but actually it will also get us this thing or it'll soothe this or have this effect.
Yes.
Which again, all of those rules just serve to bring the world to life. And actually like by having the keywords and the combinations of ways you can approach it really gives you a strong visual sense of like the thing.
Oh, absolutely.
Like there was a bit early on where there's like an underwater thing.
Oh, yeah.
That
you
can swim down to. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the tasks that are quite rare where all of the players have to do it.
Yeah, you have to put this thing called your ranger token on there, which kind of represents that you are physically present at that location.
Yes. And it means that once you've done it, you've like, I've achieved this thing, you put your ranger token there, and it means you are there.
You're physically there. Yeah.
And it means that then it's easier for other rangers to do that because like you're helping them. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and this one, it was like you had to do a deep dive down because there was like a bubble at the bottom of this lake. And you're like, what's in the bubble?
I've not been there.
I know, and I have, and it's cool. It's just like a cool thing. But that was lovely in the fact that like that really shone a light on the differences between the characters and the fact that like for one character it was very easy for them to do that. They were like super fit.
Yeah, really good.
Like, yeah, sure, I can just swim underwater. But for me it was like I was bad at that.
Yeah, yeah.
And having this thing of like, do we want to do this? There's no reason to do this other than we want to know what's in the bubble. And it was hard work because it was that thing of like, well, how do we get you down here?
Because
you don't have the fitness. And it was a combination of help and keeping cards that could be played to help me, and also like me trying to find a piece of equipment in my bag that could help me do it. Like,
yeah,
and it felt like, yeah, it told a little story.
I had an almost opposite problem with that in terms of the gear, where because I'm playing a similar character, I'd just put on my really nice climbing gloves because we were going to go and climb up a wall, and then it was like, swim down here because it destroyed your gear, I think, which is again just delightful, like getting your gloves. And I put them on, I was like, but I don't want to ruin my nice gloves.
I just put my gloves
and, like,
on.
Luke was going like, oh, no, come on, the water's fine, like get down here, because he was like super fit and didn't have any gear
on
him. And I was there at the shore going like, I don't want to go in.
being the nerd being like, oh, but my iPad. It's cool. And like the way that the draw works and the way that like when you're moving between locations your equipment stays and things means that like, gosh, it really did give me that feeling of going on a little hike or an adventure of having one session. I remember, you know, it is very much like you talking about having to rush a session. It's not that kind of game. It's a lovely weekend thing where you're going to sit down.
Let's have an adventure.
And you're going to play for a few hours. Mm-hmm. And I remember we sat down and we were like, what are we going to do today on this adventure? And we're like, well, we're on our way over here. But then I remember the first round, me getting a draw of hands where I'm like, ooh, I've pulled out my boots and my hiking sticks.
Yeah.
And it was like, wow, I am like, way more equipped than usual to doing like some of the more fitness based things. And it was that thing of like, let's go on a big adventure.
Let's
like,
go,
you
on
know,
a hike.
It's like we can. It was so cool being like, this could be a real session. Like me drawing these cards early, it's like, let's go. It had that feeling of like waking up fresh and going outside and being like, it's gonna be, the weather's good, it's a nice day, let's go.
That's so good. And that's definitely true of like, of the, because it's also very interesting seeing how the different, we didn't touch on this in the video, but we've got a relatively limited slice of this because me and you are playing the same character or similar characters.
But there's like the shapers who are kind of magic
stuff.
Yeah,
so we played a few sessions of this, like, 3 and 4 player before eventually settling on just doing it us two. But yeah, we had my friend Sean was playing a shaper, essentially a wizard in this world, but also one that has like an animal companion, and their whole deck revolves around like having their animal helper like help them with bits and bobs and taking care of them and looking after them. And then Forager is the other class, which is all about like using the plants that are in the world to do stuff, but also like having little supplies of like berries and stuff like that. The fact that one of their like key pivotal cards is just a trowel, like, it's delightful. It's just so charming and sweet. And, you know, we talked a lot as well about this game coming to life in your mind because all of the really evocative use of language. One thing we did touch on as well is like the way that the flavor text and actual text of the card sort of intermingles, in that you will have a thing that will be like, use this card to pluck or whatever in bold.
Yeah.
And then in slightly smaller grayed out text, a berry from the bush or something like that, right?
Yeah.
Which is, it's showing you clearly it's not rules text.
Yeah.
It's just flavor. But the way that it's perfectly syncs everything, you know, into one run-on sentence. And then also the way that all of the different bits of equipment, they all use like charges, right? You put charges on them and you spend charges to use them. But it uses different language.
Yes.
So it's like, for biscuits, like 3 biscuits.
Yes.
And they are just charges. But the way that it says, I will use one of my biscuits or whatever.
Yeah.
And then some stuff does just have charge. Some stuff has, I don't know, like
ink ribbons
or something like that.
That's a good thing. I hadn't thought, the way that it allows them by having this concrete set of language for what the interaction words are means that they actually, they can have like keywords that are just all over the place.
Yes, yeah.
Like in terms of like, I hadn't noticed that. It's not like, add a charge to the biscuit meter.
Yeah, it's add a biscuit to the biscuit
meter. It's biscuits.
Yeah, feed a guy a biscuit. And I just wanted, because all of this, like, I think the reason, or the point at which Earthborn Rangers really started to sing for me was just when everything clicks into place and something really vividly like springs into your mind. Like, this game more than anything else has really clear imagery in my head.
Yeah.
I've been able to imagine this world far more than anything else. And it was a moment when we'd just started a session, and similar to you, where it was like getting equipment out of the bag, because I'd given Luke some equipment because of in that early draft, right? When you give other people stuff. And so we started the session and Luke took out his photoscopic glasses, which are these like things scout far, put them on his, and we were at the top of a mountain, which means you can scout more easily. He puts those on, gets like a walking stick out, and it's this, the idea of, we're at the top of a hill, gets them out and goes, scouts, and goes, oh, I can see, you know, the river down there, get rid of that from the deck so that we know where we're going. And then having the stick in hand and being like, right, let's crack on.
Yeah.
And it was that
you can see it,
moment.
Yeah?
You can just see the image in your head.
It's
incredible.
The two things, because I spent a lot of time with this game playing it and being like, oh, this is really cool and interesting and I like this and fun. Like, it's just like, this is great. But I kept being like, oh, but I wonder, because I didn't want to talk about it for a long time because I was like, this might be incredible. Like, but I was like, I don't know. I need
to
play
more.
Yet. And eventually, I think when it got to the point where there's some plot beats where, like, I mentioned very briefly in the review, there's some flash flooding and you have to just like quickly go around to like the different places and just check that people are okay. And that's kind of like a time sensitive thing where it's like, you've got to do this in the day. And if you're in the middle of doing another thing already, it's very much that's like, well, just work it out in a way that was exciting. But then after those floods, there's like some stuff kind of washed up that's like an element of mystery of like, there's some weird creatures that are kind of like you've not seen before. In a way that's like, what are these things? They look odd and maybe dangerous. What's the deal with this? Could it be related to some of the other odd stuff going on? So it starts to seed like there's a mystery here that you can go into. But it was fascinating that I realized at that point, I'm like, oh, cool, but I don't care. Like, not in a bad way. It's like, I do care. I do want to follow that thread, but it's not like that's now me playing the game to get that
that's
story.
Not the hook, you know. The hook is just that you're having a lovely time.
The hook is there's all these really cool places that I want to visit and find out more about. And like the fact that now there's like an overarching story of something weird happening in the world, cool, great. Like, actually surprising how little I needed that rather than usually it's like that is central. But the two things that made me go, oh gosh, this is just so good, were there was a location which was like a really high point and we realized that by going to this place and achieving this thing, it meant that we could do something that allowed us to automatically put like 8 successes onto our next location. Which basically the theming of it is like, it's an amazing viewpoint, which means you're standing there and you're taking the time to like look at the route ahead. And then it means that the next space, we just like were there for like a minute.
Because you already knew your route.
Because we knew the route, because we'd seen it. And it's like, that's so simple, but so clever of like, we've mapped it out and then it's really easy for the next stage. And then the other thing was the keyword thing finally clicking, where there was a creature I met which was a sentient creature, an NPC, mm-hmm. that was also kind of a plant.
Mm-hmm.
And discovering that it was like, yeah, it was like sentient, like flora.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, cool. But then it made me realize it was like, we had to talk to this person. And often with NPCs, it's like predators will attack them.
Mm-hmm.
And if they get hurt too much, then they'll leave.
Yeah. And that ends your day, right? I think in some cases.
In some cases, yeah. If you are doing a mission or something where you have to look after someone, mm-hmm. that ends your day.
Yeah.
Because like the person you're looking after. But in this instance, it's just like, we want to talk to this person.
Mm-hmm.
And then we realized that like a couple of deer had turned up. And then we're like, oh no. Because we realized that usually it's like, oh no, there's wolves. So we have to get rid of the wolves because they'll attack the person. But it's like the deer are trying to eat them because they're a plant. And so we just hadn't clocked that it was like, usually it's like, ah, it's just deer. It's fine. It's not a problem. But it's like, actually the deer are a real problem
That's
now.
So funny.
And it's like then quite hard to get rid of the deer because usually you don't have to because it's like, well, they're not a problem. Maybe they'll eat the berries you're going to collect or whatever. But it's like, oh, I'll live. And yeah, the way that all clicked into place of being like, oh, that's just so cool.
That's so funny as well, the way that it would recontextualize. You know, we talked earlier about the woods, the early location being like really like low threat and not dangerous at all. And that's so funny how it now becomes the worst place in the world for that one guy.
Just,
it's just packed with imagining
this creature
predator.
Being like, ah! It was just so funny how it just created this mysterious character that's like, what is this thing? And then immediately it starts shifting towards being like, oh, this is kind of hilarious, but also like, oh no.
Oh.
And again, like it really hammered home the theme being very much like Avatar: The Last Airbender, sort of like this sort of world of wonder and interesting stuff and interesting people with a bit of danger and a bit of grown-up stuff there, but not so much that it was like ever too intense or frightening.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? Absolutely. It's just good. I want to go to the swamp.
It's very good.
Neither of us have been to the swamp.
No,
at the
I've not
of the
been
map
to the
yet.
Swamp.
It looks horrible.
I've
like,
been
I
to
saw
the,
one
yeah.
of the cards when I was sorting out the decks and I was like, I don't want to see that ever again.
That's it. It's like, you know, I didn't use B-roll of many of the biomes.
No.
I purposefully maybe had three different biomes shown.
Yeah, we did like B-roll. All the ones that are like very accessible within your like first session, basically.
Yeah, and I didn't want to show more than that, partially because I think that like looking at those cards too closely is just very exciting because it does make the world spring to life. But also, I didn't want to see them.
No, for sure.
This game has now supplanted, I think the last thing I'll say about this game for now, because I'm sure it's a game we'll be talking about again in the future, is that this game has supplanted Gloomhaven for me now.
Yeah.
As being both the game that I decided to cover at a point where I still hadn't seen about half of it, at least, because I just thought, you know what? I don't need to see any more of this. I know it's amazing.
Yeah.
And also, I don't want to spoil it for myself.
Right.
I'm not willing to do that, which is always like a real, like, I'm a professional. I don't do that. You know, like, if I have to get a sense of what something is, I will look at everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm not doing that with this because it's like, no.
Or like rushing your time with it to get a video out that's 100%. Like more complete because your thoughts aren't going to change, you know?
And we don't often get the luxury of having games like this that we can just play for pleasure. Like, you know, we will obviously go back to classic games, especially, you know, when we're at conventions and things, people being like, you want to play Bonanza again? It's like, hell yeah,
of course
I'll play that. But when you have these big campaign games, it's very hard to meter out the time for that alongside checking out new big campaign
games.
So usually I have one or two things that are like my treat games.
Comfort games.
Yeah. My like Pandemic Legacies, after we covered them, it's like, yeah, I'm still going to enjoy that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
On my time. But this is now, Gloomhaven has been that for me for a long time. The game I go back to and play just for pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
And now I think it's this.
Yeah. Feels like that for me as well.
Which is interesting because the way that it replaces like extensive tuck boxes and hidden envelopes, all of the things that got me really excited about Gloomhaven, the way it replaces those things with like single cards and paragraphs of text just feels so natural and so smart that it kind of, it now just makes the other stuff look a bit silly.
And such a good direction for like board games to go broadly, you know, having that sort of like excitement just within cards rather than within tuck boxes and hidden stuff. Like, it's just so much simpler as a production. And it is a real magic trick.
It is.
They've managed to make that as exciting as opening a little box.
That's
they
it.
Have.
It's like, wow, this is how you do it.
Yeah.
It's like, it's real like industry leading stuff. Yeah. And I mean, also it's like, possibly the first kind of immersive sim.
Yeah,
in
quite
the
possibly.
Board games. And the fact that it does that it's just cards.
It's just cards.
You open up the box, and I don't know if that's the standard production thing, but if it is, cool. And it was just like, in mine, it was just a big like oblong of loads of cards and then a big folded up bit of brown paper to kind of keep them roughly in the right place to stop them rolling around the
and
box too much.
A few tokens.
Yeah, and a few tokens to pop out. But
that's it.
it's kind of a magic trick.
Wild.
Amazing. Wild. Check it out.
What a great game. If you want to hear more about some of the stuff that we, again, even more of the stuff that we didn't want to touch in the video for fear of it being too long, we were going to talk about the video game Rain World and the TV show Scavenger's Rain, which are some little bits of media that feel like they fit really nicely with what Earthborn Rangers is doing.
Yes.
We were kind of consuming them around that time as well. Yeah. So it kind of all, you know, came
We both like kind of independently were like, I hadn't really played much Rain World or seen much about it, but I was like, I think you like this because it feels kind of like that.
God, and then you were so like, similar.
Oh, it is.
Yeah,
and then also, Scavenger's Rain, a TV show, which I really got into, and it was like around the same time. Much meaner than Earthborn, but again,
it's horrible.
There's so much overlap, and we really both love those things. So we're going to do a Bonus Bits podcast talking about those two things.
We have done a Bonus Bits podcast talking about those things.
The chronology of time is so complicated in the podcast realm. But yeah, you've got a Bonus Bits episode, which you can listen to if you are a supporter of Shut Up Sit Down, which you can do at shutupandsitdown.com/donate or patreon.com/shutupandsitdown. If you love the podcast and the show, you could chuck us some cash. If you don't want to, that's fine.
That's completely okay.
Thank you very much. And you know, you can go onto our Spotify and leave a comment about this week's hot topic. What's the hot topic question of the week for this podcast, Tom?
Should Matt go to prison?
it's that again. Go and post a comment on the podcast letting us know whether or not you think I should go to prison.
Again.
Thank you for listening. Goodbye.
Bye.